Hello, sports fans, and welcome to Sportsnet 650, your radio home of the Vancouver Canucks. Brooke Ward with you in for Drance and Dodd today. Glad you are with us. If you're looking for Drance and Dodd, they're done for the week. They've taken the week off. They took their whole show with them. And it is not Canuck Central. It's Sportsnet Today now as well. They took the whole show. Brooke's coming in. We're taking the whole show. Not a bad idea. Welcome here. I'm glad you enjoyed yesterday. I hope you enjoyed yesterday. I had a lot of good feedback in the Dunbar Lumber text in line. Text in the box, I should say. So had some good results there. You're welcome to jump in again today. 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, the text line. Three stores to serve you. They're in Ladner and Bridge Street. Dunbar Lumber, the Express. I think that should be a drive-through, but it's not. But the Express... at Ladner, you need a couple of screws. Why get in line? Just go right through the drive-thru. Think about it, Dunbar Lumber. The Express at Ladner Center, the main office, the flagship Dunbar Lumber, Arbutus Street in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com as well. Welcome to the big show. It is game night for the Vancouver Canucks. Their expansion cousins from 1970 are here tonight. The Buffalo Sabres, Tatanka. Sabres are in town. They are... nosing around a playoff spot. The Canucks are not nosing around a playoff spot, but the Canucks are still continuing to turn their noses up at those behind them in the race for top spot in the Western Conference. Things could change tonight, though. Canucks need a win over Buffalo to stay in top spot in the West. Otherwise, other teams, the Jets, the Rangers, they may have, or the Jets and the Avalanche may have something to say about that as well. The Jets are tied up with the Avs and the Stars, 1 point behind Vancouver in the West. The Stars are off tonight. The Avs have the Blues. The Jets have the New York Rangers. So basically, by the time the Canucks hit the ice tonight, they'll know, if it's at all important to them, they will know that they need victory or what result they may need to stay in top spot in the West. And it's pick your poison, as we talked about yesterday, when it comes to being in the West. Top team in the West will face wild card team number two. Right now, it's Vegas. The team's vying basically odds-on favorites for playoffs, third in the Pacific or wild card, are the Kings. I don't want to really play them. Vegas, not too keen on playing them. Or you're looking at Nashville. I'm not keen on playing any of those teams in the first round of the playoffs. You're going to have to take... and at this point, Edmonton, by the way, as we touched on yesterday, don't forget about them. Because I've long forgotten about the Oilers. And now I have to pay attention again. The Oilers, 8 behind Vancouver, 3 games in hand. 2 to play against the Canucks still. And the Oilers remain basically the hottest team in the National Hockey League throughout the first 20 games. And the Oilers are right there, and they are on the Canucks' heels. I don't know if the Canucks are looking over their shoulders at all. Every hockey team's going to tell you, well, I'm looking ahead. I don't look behind me. But it's hard not to ignore the Oilers, and the Oilers are certainly looking ahead. In Edmonton, they believe they can and will catch the Vancouver Canucks. And if you asked me 2-3 weeks ago, despite the hot streak Edmonton's been on for so long, a couple of weeks ago even, I would have thought there's no way. Now you've got me looking over my shoulder at Edmonton as well. Lots of things to talk about today. Going to hear from Rick Tocchet, head coach of the Canucks, after his game day talk with the media today. A few things that have come out. We'll hear from him later in the program. A few things that have come out. Lindholm up on power play unit number one. That is the tail of the tape. Assuming it stays that way when the game starts tonight. Lindholm up playing on power play number one. The power play has not been doing a lot lately. And when you look at the personnel up there, I don't know if I'm putting Lindholm up there, but when you look at the, I guess you got to do something. When you look at the personnel on the power play for the Canucks, how do they not score when you look at all the talent? Like earlier this year, when they were burying it right and left on the power play and winning a lot of games by big scores helped up with the power play. Well, you're looking at Miller, you got Besser, you got Pettersson. You've got Hughes, you've got Hronek. That's your number one unit. Almost, you really do think, how do you not score? But whatever they're doing on the power play, you're looking at putting Lindholm up on the first unit. You're going to take somebody out of that first unit as well. We'll see how it shakes down tonight. Things can change. But that's one of the things Rick Tocchet and the rest of the coaching staff are tinkering with. Dakota Joshua progressing on Brendan Batchelor's site right now, by the way. Credit to Batch on Twitter. Tocchet says Joshua's progressing. They're going cautious with him and the hand injury after the fight. It is amazing more players are not hurt having fights. I mean, if you really watch and able to slow down replays frame by frame, there's a lot of knuckles right into the helmet. There's a lot of that going on. Ernie Punch McLean said to me years ago, and I'll have to clean it up, but we were talking about how it's 4 or 5 years ago, so it's not like we were in the 70s, but I'm talking to Punch about still fighting in hockey. And he said, I really don't understand fighting in hockey now. Who would want to punch the S-bomb out of a helmet? Basically, who wants to punch the crap out of a helmet? Like, even when you don't get hurt, it looks like it hurts. Unless something's changed with helmets over the years and there's more give on the helmet when you're punching away. But so many times, and Joshua gets hurt that way, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. And whatever's in the mindset of the players today that are taking full-on swings at every level, happens with the Dub, happens with the Giants, happens with everybody, the full-on power swings at every level into the helmet, I'm just assuming, well, it can't hurt that much because guys are still doing it. Extra padding on the helmet, maybe it doesn't hurt as much as it used to. I was a goalie, so I never dropped them ever. So who am I to know what's changed maybe over the years? Anyway, Joshua's coming along. Amon is in the game tonight. PDG is out, and the Canucks are going to try a new look on the power play. We'll hear more on this stuff later on with the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Also, we will dip into the Buffalo Sabres coffers and talk with Matthew Fairbergen. Matthew Fairbergen here to join us, one of the Sabres reporters. I have not talked to Matthew before, obviously, so this will be a first time. It'll be a thrill for him, I'm sure. Anyway, we're going to talk with Matthew later about what's going on with the Sabres. They've won 4 of 5. They're within 4 points of a playoff spot. And they're now with this, again, it takes 4 of 5, right? You had to win 4 of 5 to get within 4 of a playoff spot. You continue to try and climb that hill. These guys basically within 4 of a playoff spot to get into a playoff spot. Home and clear at a playoff spot. They need losses in front of them. Their 4 or 5 has to change to 8 or 9. Just shows you when you are trailing, like the Oilers, frankly, coming on. You expend so much energy trying to catch the team in front of you. The Oilers have gotten within 8 of Vancouver, 3 games in hand. But the energy you expend doing that, if you won 3 in a row and the Canucks lose 3 in a row, catching a team and getting close to them like the Oilers are trying to do, that's one thing. For some reason, once teams are caught, whether they kick it into a new gear due to urgency or the other team's just now complacent because, whoosh, we made up 20 points on those guys, the teams rarely pass them. They do not pass them. Catch-up takes a lot out of you. And I've seen it so many times over the years. So as I look at the Oilers in this situation, speaking of Buffalo, trying to catch up and get in the playoffs in the East, Oilers try to catch Vancouver. Still, what are the odds in Vegas? The odds still heavily favoring Vancouver, despite the trends of the hockey clubs. You watch. I'm not saying the Oilers cannot pass Vancouver, catch them and pass them, but I've seen it so many times it takes so much out of you trying to do it. By the time you get there, the other team pulls away, and you're like, ugh. And once they pull away again, often you don't have a lot left in the tank to try and catch them. Anyway, we're going to talk some Sabres later. We'll talk some general NHL too. Jacob Stoller from the Hockey News is going to join us. Because there's lots of things going on around the National Hockey League other than the Canuck-Buffalo game tonight. By the way, the Canucks, as we say, if the playoffs started right now, the Canucks would be playing wildcard team number 2 in the Western Conference. And wildcard team number 2 is the Golden Knights right now. The Knights are tied with the Kings for points in the Pacific with 79, but the Kings have one more regulation win. So the Kings are slugged 3rd right now. Nashville, 3 points up of L.A. and the Golden Knights. But they're 4th in the Central. So Nashville's wildcard team number 1. Then you have Vegas. Right now it's the Canucks and Vegas would play. Wildcard team number two against the top point getter in the West. Things, as mentioned, could change tonight as well with Winnipeg playing and Colorado playing. If I'm looking at jockeying for position behind Vancouver right now, the Preds are hosting San Jose tonight. Vegas hosting Tampa Bay tonight. And the LA Kings have Chicago tonight. So lowly San Jose and Nashville, that should be two for the Preds. The Kings and Chicago should be two for the Kings. Vegas has Tampa. You know, Tampa's 10 games above 500. Tampa's still Tampa, so that's a tougher contest to try to pull a winner out of that. But if I was going to, right now, figure out ahead of what's going to happen tonight, I'd go, well, Preds get two, the Kings get two, and I got Vegas hosting Tampa, though, but I'll give Tampa that win. I think when the dust settles tonight, you're still looking at the Canucks take it on. As long as the Canucks remain the first team and win, beat Buffalo tonight, they're still looking at the Golden Knights. But when the dust settles tonight, the Canucks, as we're nearing the stretch run, could be scheduled to face the LA Kings in the first round of the playoffs. I'm at that point where I'm starting to look at who will they play in the first round. The Oilers might have something to say about that. The Jets, the Avalanche, certainly as well. Jets and Rangers tonight, Avs and Blues. We'll talk about some of these races going on with Jacob Stoller later. Also, general manager meetings on the slate, the GM meetings. Among other issues, high stick reviews. Just review everything, huh? High stick reviews are on the ledger. I do not like the head snapping back of players, too. We have four officials on the ice. Do you want six more? Get more input maybe from the two linesmen on the ice of whether the snap back was legit or not, so I could have the refs huddle up for a quick second. But certainly, as we said through time, some of the reviews are quick and some are not so quick. And if they're not quick, then they're inconclusive, right? And you stick with the call on the ice. Do I need to slow the game down more by high stick reviews? Can they do it quicker at the head office? They should be able to look at every call at the head office before the official basically gets to the penalty box to be able to decide, is it clean or not? Now, the odd one, maybe not so much. But just about every call, you should be able to make. You and I see one replay, and you pretty well know. But sometimes it takes forever. And there was a review for, I think, an offside with the Oilers game the other day that took over 4 minutes to decide whether it was offside or not on what I believe was an Oiler goal. Over 4 minutes, you're sitting around like, aren't we inconclusive yet? Coley Campbell, VP, director of hockey ops for the league, said, well, it was only 4 minutes. So I think after the game, McDavid had said, man, that took 15 minutes. And then Campbell said, no, it didn't. It only took four. Well, there's an argument. You're losing by winning. If you're going to announce, let's review more stuff, you got to do it way faster. And not everything's 4 minutes or 15 minutes, but boy, it feels like it sometimes. So high sticks may get reviewed. So far, no changes in order for 3-on-3. The regroup that teams are doing right now. The NHL, well, they're also saying we don't want to call a whistle for the regroup. Don't want to call a penalty on the regroup. We don't want to stop play with another whistle on the regroup. So they're at this point, they have no other solutions. It appears 3-on-3 is just going to stay the same as far as allowing players to rope-a-dope and take it back in their own end or pass it to their own goalie. There's still like 75% of games are still decided in overtime. Eventually, you get to the excitement. But the rope-a-dope allowing everyone to change, it is just, yeah, coach will sink his teeth into something that was meant to create offense, and suddenly it's not creating the offense it used to. I get it. But I still rarely turn away from 3-on-3 overtime. No talk at this point of them expanding the time limit on the 3-on-3, maybe to 7 minutes. Or, Lord, how about a full 10 and no shootout? Are the shootouts all that right now? Is 3-on-3 better than the shootout? I find the 3-on-3 more entertaining usually than the shootout. But if you were going to make it 10 minutes, now I don't want to see 7 minutes of rope-a-dope before you get to trying to win the game. Shootout's not going anywhere. It's just like if you had the choice, would you take 10 minutes of overtime and no shootout? Or would you 7 minutes and still the shootout? Or do you just like it the way it is? I'd love your opinion on that. in the inbox, 650-650, presentation of Dunbar Lumber. Hit me up with that. Also, bottom of the hour, somewhere in here today, I'm going to find a spot to open up the phone lines. Maybe after Talk It, because we're probably getting to Talk It around 1:30. Maybe after that, we'll open up phone lines so you can get some calls, too, based on what Talk It may have to say today, or has said already today. Because I think he was in favor of the high stick reviews as well. It's got to be quick. It's got to be quick. What would you do with 3-on-3 overtime? Do you mind the regroup? I really didn't notice it that much until media started pointing it out. Oh, look, it's the regroup. Frankly, I hadn't noticed it a whole lot before then. Anyway, hit me in the inbox. Any of that, you're certainly welcome to. Lots going on. Ovi, why not? Just stay on the hockey trend. By the way, Major League Baseball starts tomorrow. Ovi! Two more goals for Ovechkin last night, so he is on a tear right now. Ovi, 8 goals in his first 43 games this year, and people said it was over. It was over for Ovi. 13 goals in his last 21 games now for Ovechkin. 2 last night in a Washington win over Calgary. And he had that one against the Canucks the other night. By the way, when he scored against Vancouver, I thought, you know what, hockey fans in Vancouver, if you were there, appreciate it. Because how many more goals will you actually get to see Ovi score live? He'll be back next year, maybe. That might be the final goal Ovechkin ever scores in Vancouver, a chip-in from the side of the net. I'm thinking of that, but remember the goal. If I'm in attendance, I got to keep that in my head. I might see Ovi play again, so I can say, yeah, I saw the last game Ovi ever played in Vancouver. But that could be the last goal he ever scores in Vancouver. Remember it. You were there. He's got 841 going into play last night, 843 now. 11 goals in his last 20 for Ovechkin going into play last night, 13 now in his last 21. So Ovechkin obviously has come alive with 21 on the year. He's within 51 now of Wayne Gretzky. He's also beaten 174 different goaltenders in the National Hockey League as well, Ovi. I don't know how many Wayne beat, but Ovi's 174, so he's averaging over 4 goals against every goalie he's faced, Ovechkin. That's crazy. Washington, by the way, wild card number 2 now in the East, and Ovechkin is making a difference. So Washington is crept into a playoff spot in the East as well. 51 shy of 894 the Gretzky set years ago. When Gretzky did that, quit the game, I mean, you just thought, 890, this is nothing new, right? 894, who's going to catch 894? Ovi's 843 to me are different than Gretzky's 894. In fact, I mean, Wayne's got the higher number. But who scored the tougher goals? Who faced the tougher goaltending? Who played through kind of a dead puck era for at least a few years? Ovi. Better goaltending. Better defensive schemes. Now, Wayne didn't have 3-on-3 OT a lot. That probably made a difference. I'd have to go add up all Ovi's 3-on-3 overtime goals. But still, if I'm just looking at eras, Ovi, way better goaltending on a whole than Gretzky faced. Whose goal total is more impressive? And there's more to it just than goaltending, but whose goal total is more impressive? It was easier to score goals when Gretzky was playing, especially in the 80s. So Ovi's 843 to me. Yeah, I don't want him to catch Gretzky because Gretzky's my era record, basically. I just don't want him. I just want that Gretzky record to stand. But if anyone's going to do it, Ovi's earned it, right? And those 843 against way stiffer competition, way stiffer goaltending, way better coached goaltending, better equipment goaltending. That's right up there with Wayne's 894. Anyway, Ovi's on a roll and the Capitals are starting to come on too. And one more note for you, because why wouldn't we? Out of Philadelphia, do you miss Torts in Vancouver? I kind of miss Torts. I love Tocchet, by the way, because when Tocchet tells you the truth. So does Torts, but Torts, you know, either gets suspended or often embarrasses people doing the interview with his honesty. But I love Tockett, because when Tockett speaks, you will learn something. Tockett will tell you, yeah, we're not getting a play from down here or here or here. We got to get more out of this. I got to get guys into a fourth and a fifth gear in the stretch. And, you know, Vigneault and some of the other vanilla guys, they don't say, yeah, we need to do more. We need. When Tockett speaks, he talks to you like a player, or much like you and I as the fan, because Tockett is telling you things that you can actually watch for and things that he's actually doing, not afraid to tell you what he's actually doing. Other coaches are. Tortorella, same diff. Not afraid to not necessarily tell you what we're doing, but tell you what I think of you and what he thinks of his players at time. One of his best quotes years ago, David Booth playing for the Canucks. And after the game, Tort said, well, Booth was our best player tonight. I guess someone had asked just about, what do you think of Booth? Booth was our next player tonight. And no disrespect, but when Booth is your best player, you got problems. And I had to howl. It was just so perfect. Tortorella is scratching his captain tonight. Sean Couturier scratched, and with good reason, probably, and Torts needs to get this guy going. Toronto in town to play Philadelphia. For a moment there, when I saw the matchup, I thought, oh, is this game in Toronto as well, where everyone likes to play? And Torch scratching a guy in Toronto? That's almost bigger than on home ice. But it may be a while till they play in Toronto, so lo and behold, the Leafs are in town. Hey, same diff. The Flyers are on a 4-5-1 run, but Couturier is not. One assist in his last 9 games. 3 assists in his last 14. Has not scored since February 10th. 16 games. Previous goal before that, January 6th. 2 goals in 33 games for his captain, Couturier, who's somehow sitting, despite all that, he's still got 11 on the year, which is pretty ugly. 11 goals and 25 assists. Only played 12 minutes and 44 seconds in his last game, Tortorella, too. So there's Tortorella. Speaking of balls, Tortorella has the balls to sit his captain. Couturier, by the numbers, is due to get parked. But if you got to light a spark under somebody, you're parking your captain. Like, what if Quinn Hughes was struggling in Vancouver at this rate, like Torts was, or like Couturier was, and you just said, well, I got to send a message, and Juulsen is going to give me more. What if in Vancouver, Tockett parked Quinn Hughes or Pettersson or JT Miller? I mean, he has parked Besser before. But what if you did it? Wow, you know what would hit the fan here? It'd be crazy. Not even if the fans would disagree. It'd just be crazy time. In Philly, they might not notice. Still a good hockey town, but they might not notice. Couturier, healthy. Scratch. Ouch. In Philly. Lots going on. Canucks and Buffalo tonight as well. The text line, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650. It's starting to cook. We're going to talk some Sabres in a couple minutes with Matthew Fairbergen. Then we'll get into the text box as well, get some reaction. We're going to open up phone lines later in the program as well. And if I could find the scripts that were already given to me by Dominic earlier today, I would tell you that JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial services, you got to check them out. If your workplace demands a clean environment, I hope it should, by the way, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote, free. Visit janpro.ca, janpro.ca. Canuck Talk, by the way, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. You can be a champion on your work site. Why wouldn't you be? Find them together online, DLE. AMC. You got your DLE and you got your AMP. Your DLE and your AMP. DLEAMC.com is the website. Elad is here behind the scenes. Victor's here behind the scenes. Dom's behind the scenes, because usually it's Drance and Dodd here and you just need one guy to produce the program. They're gone. I'm a handful. Got 3 in the hand. Canucks Sabres coming up tonight. You're going to hear it all right here. The flagship station of Vancouver Canucks hockey. This is Sportsnet 650. Sportsnet 650. Your radio home for the Vancouver Canucks. Your one-stop sports shopping network. Don't touch that dial. If you have a dial, don't even touch it. If people have dials anymore. If it's push button, don't push that button. Here for the next 90 minutes, Brooke Ward in for Drantz and Dodd today. Canucks, Sabres, the expansion cousins from 1970. About to do battle tonight here in Vancouver. Matthew Fairburn is joining us now. Sabres reporter. Matthew, my friend, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Welcome to Vancouver. You brought the sunshine with you, I hope, anyway. But thanks, pal, because it looks pretty good here. Is the sun shining on this Sabre team right now? What is it, 4-5? What's the difference in how they've been playing lately?
Yeah, the sun is shining a bit for these guys. You know, they're trying to hang on to their slim playoff hopes, and the rest of the Eastern Conference is cooperating by, you know, seemingly nobody wants that last wild card spot. So that's given the Sabres some new life. I think getting the trade deadline behind them really helped. They bring in Bo Byram, and he's fit in seamlessly on the top pair with Rasmus Dahlin. They moved out a couple of veterans, and it's allowed some breathing room for some of the younger leaders to step up. And I think when the pressure came off a little bit and a lot of people thought they were out of the playoff race, that's when you saw them loosen up and really start to play more like the team that we saw last season. And it's rough that it took this long to get to this point, to where they're playing what I would say is their best hockey. But here they are hanging out on the fringe of a playoff race. The math is not in their favor, but they're certainly, with the way they're playing, there's still some belief in that locker room that they could pull off the unthinkable and make a run at it.
Yeah, at least there's meaningful games, huh? But four out sounds like nothing. But you got to pass two teams, got to pass the Islanders, got to pass the Wings. You need teams in front of you to lose. Suddenly 4 points being out, especially if you have teams to pass over, I would suggest, Matthew, it is a tall order.
It absolutely is. There's a reason that, you know, the math on, you know, if you look at Money Puck and their playoff odds, they have the Sabres at 7.2% as of today, which isn't bad. It was 5.4 when I checked at some point last night. So it's getting a little bit better. But to your point, they may only be 4 points out, but the Washington Capitals, who have that final wild card spot, have two games in hand on the Sabres. Mm-hmm. They are 3 points behind the Detroit Red Wings, and the Red Wings still have a game in hand. And they are 2 points behind the Islanders, but the Islanders have two games in hand. And they're only 2 points ahead of the Penguins, who also have two games in hand on them. So
you're bumming
me out. That's where the math is a bit of a problem, right? You know, you see how you need to win, you know, almost not every game, but you need to win a lot of games down the stretch. And this is a Sabres team that has not won more than three in a row all season long. That's been their biggest problem, is finding that consistency. That loss to the Detroit Red Wings on Saturday really, really hurt them. And they do have another game against the Red Wings. They have two games against the Capitals. So they have a chance to make up some ground on these teams they're chasing. But this current West Coast swing they're on is absolutely huge. They got the win in Seattle last night, but now, you know, a tough Vancouver team on a back-to-back, and then, you know, Edmonton and Calgary over the weekend. It's going to really, you know, sort of define their season, and we'll see if they can return home with still some meaningful games to play in front of their home crowd.
It's amazing to think that, well, Buffalo's played 69. You got 13 games left. Like, all of a sudden, you're down to, like, 13 games remaining. So trying to make up that ground, you got to beat those teams that you're playing that are in front of you, obviously, too, but if you're the Canucks right now, okay, I put you on the spot. Scout for me, please, Matthew. If you're the Canucks, what's your biggest worry about Buffalo tonight? What's your biggest concern about the Sabres? What do you have to look out for?
You know, I'd say the biggest concern about the Sabres might be one that the Canucks don't necessarily have to worry about, because the reason they're back in this spot, I think, is the play of Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen in net. And considering he played last night in Seattle, I think there's an outside chance they would consider going back to him, but I think there's a pretty good chance the Canucks won't see Luukkonen. So, you know, that's, you know, one big threat eliminated right there just by virtue of the schedule. I would say that when the Sabres are going, when they're playing their best, and which they have been in the last couple of weeks, that top pair of Bo Byram and Rasmus Dahlin has been a real game changer for them. That's a true defensive partner for Dahlin that can think the game and play the game at a similar pace. And it has really changed how, you know, on their toes the Sabres are able to play. They're starting to get a little bit more out of, you know, some of their top players. Tage Thompson scored against the Kraken. Jeff Skinner had a hat trick. Alex Tuck scored. That's been a major thing that's plagued this team, is their top players not producing. They're finding some confidence. So that's really, you know, probably what you're circling on the whiteboard is some of those best players. But under the radar for the Sabres, too, is Jordan Greenway has been outstanding over the last, you know, couple weeks. Really consistent over the course of the season, but has found another level. He's a problem defensively, but he's also, you know, a problem for the other team, I should say. You know, he's a very good defensive player, but he's also just been creating a lot of chances in the offensive zone because of his ability to disrupt breakouts and be in the right place. He's been a huge asset on their penalty kill. So he's kind of an under-the-radar player to look out for. It seems like this time of year has brought out some of his best hockey.
Byram and Dahlin, too. I mean, once Byram got there from Colorado, I just noticed that he was back in an offensive role, which he was not necessarily in with Makar, and they changed his role in Colorado. Is that the type of role? And he's scoring, too. But I'm expecting and not surprised that they're playing him in an offensive role, unless I'm wrong.
Yeah, it was kind of fun to see that instantly when he got there, Don Granato did not hesitate to put him right on the top pair with Rasmus Dahlin, and they haven't moved off that really since. Byram's playing on the left side, Dahlin on the right, and, you know, like I mentioned, they think the game similarly, so they've had this instant chemistry that has really helped the Sabres how they play. He's friends with a few guys on the Sabres from Hockey Canada stuff, Dylan Cousins and Peyton Krebs. You know, they played together before. I think that helped him be comfortable in the locker room right away. And then he just really has a good feel for how to play the game. And like you mentioned, that offensive role, how the Sabres want their defensemen to play, quick in transition and pushing the pace, jumping into the play in the offensive zone, it seems to fit Byram perfectly. It's been really a great match. And, you know, they had to give up Casey Mittelstadt to get him, but I think they made their team better by doing so. And now you look at that top pair, and that's a, you know, when they're rolling, that's a tough pair to go against in both ends, because he can play, you know, a really strong defensive game as well, both of those guys. But it's the way they skate, the way they move the puck, and the way they think about things, because they just see plays and try plays that a lot of defensemen either aren't capable of making, or they don't even see them develop. They seem to be a step ahead when they're playing their best.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, Byram played for the Vancouver Giants out here, too, in his Western Hockey League career, and as a 16-year-old, he wanted the puck, and that's where you really looked. A lot of 16-year-olds don't want to be anywhere near the puck. He wanted the puck, so you could tell he was going to be a great player. I would think some fans in Buffalo wouldn't really know what they're getting from him, wouldn't know he was that offensive, but it's got like 5 points or something in the 6 games he's played, 3 goals. So I think that would be a pleasant surprise for some of the hockey fans in Buffalo of going, oh, wait a minute, this is an offensive guy, and it's fun to watch offense.
Absolutely, and I think just as important is that he's not just an offensive guy. He seems to be this all-around defenseman who can push Rasmus Dahlin, and they can reach a different level together. And that's what the Sabres have been missing. They've had Dahlin, a number one overall pick, Owen Power, a number one overall pick. Finding players who can complement them and play with them has been a bit of a challenge. And you're right, when you know, as a fan base, when you see the team give up Casey Mittelstadt, the team's leading scorer, a guy who had really gone through some tough times to develop into a quality center, to give up that type of player, you're wondering what's coming back. And as a guy who played in the Western Conference and, you know, not a guy that Sabres fans see all the time, Bo Byram was a little bit of an unknown, but he's certainly cemented himself pretty quickly, you know, as an exciting player to watch, and somebody that I'm sure fans are going to continue to grow to love, because you mentioned that, you know, he wants the puck on his stick. That's still the player that he is, right? So calm with the puck, so poised, and so skilled with it, you know, able to really make some plays that you don't see a lot of defensemen make. And he's comfortable jumping into the rush, and, you know, he's really good on the power play. They had him out there you know, the first time they went to overtime when he was on the team, he and Dahlin were both out there in 3-on-3. They have both of them out there on the power play, and they're putting him in all situations, and he can really do just about everything, and he's got some leadership to him. So he's an exciting piece to add to an already, you know, high upside young core that they have in place in Buffalo. He really fits right in.
Chance for him to get his offensive confidence back too, which is not that he lost it in Colorado, but he wasn't being used in that way. And so sometimes you think, hey, maybe I've lost it. So this is a great opportunity for him too, I'm sure. I can't let you go. Local lad, Zach Benson. It took me too long to get to him. How's Benson been this year?
He's been great. You know, the point totals are starting to come in recent games. As you know, you can probably see just looking at the stats, had a couple of goals, you know, a couple games ago, and starting to pick up some points. For a while, the production wasn't there, but what's amazing about Zach Benson is he is so good away from the puck. He's so good at all the details of the game that don't show up on the score sheet sometimes that, you know, you don't see 18-year-olds do that very often, jump into the NHL. And he is one of the Sabres' hardest working players every night, but he's also one of the team's smartest players. It seems like he's always in the right position on the forecheck. He's competing hard against guys, you know, 10, 12 years older than him that have probably 50 pounds on him. And he is just such a competitive player. He's good in the defensive zone. He's been really fun to watch from that standpoint, because, you know, you're sitting up top and you watch when he doesn't have the puck, all the little things he does that create chances for his team or prevent chances for the other team. So he's been very comfortable as an NHL player. I really haven't seen too often during the season where he's hit, you know, a rookie wall or anything like that. Sure, the production wasn't always there, but he was, you know, impacting games. And it's been, you know, definitely it was a surprise coming out of camp that he was able to force his way onto the roster, but every step of the way, he's shown that he belongs. And once the points start coming, he's going to be a pretty dangerous player, because I do think there's a ton of untapped offensive potential there, where there's so many chances he's had where he could have, you know, 5, 6, 7 more goals than he does this season. And I think there's a lot of room to grow there. So he's been definitely a fun player to watch.
The pride of the Athletic, it's Matthew Fairburn, and you can catch him on Twitter, @MatthewTT, Fairburn, F-A-I-R-B-U-R-N. Then you see this great picture of a Matthew Fairburn who looks like a bearded Ryan Reynolds. So that's a nice shot there. I don't know if that's you or not. I'm starting to think maybe on mine I should put someone better looking than me on my Twitter photo, Matthew. So maybe it would get followers. I don't know, but nice
it's
job.
It's a good idea.
No, I really should put somebody way better looking than I am on there. So anyway, pal, thanks for doing this. Enjoy the game tonight, and very much appreciate you joining us here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'll catch up with you soon.
He's Matthew Fairburn. Looks like Ryan Reynolds with a beard, or is he bearded Ryan Reynolds? The pride of the Athletic. Been a long time playoff drought for the Buffalo Sabres. Same story for the Canucks. There's your expansion cousins. By the way, I'm getting texts from Dollywall. Dollywall's on his way home from his, you know, it takes two guys to do that two-hour show with one producer. Again, here it's one guy with three producers, so you can do your own math. But Dollywall's just heckling me on the way home, listening to the big show. So, you know, Donnie and Dolly on check, 10 till noon every day. Imagine that, 2 hours every day. Like Drance and Dodd, the poor guys. Every day, 2 hours. Drance got some other, so does Dodd, too. But, I mean, they got other things going on. Me, I got nothing going on. So this two-hour thing, it'd be like, yeah, okay. Then I'd go to the beach. That'd be a great thing. Anyway, it's the Canucks in Buffalo tonight. I, on the Zach Benson front, you know, decent stats for Zach Benson this year. Rookie year in the National Hockey League. 9 goals, 14 assists. I was starting to wonder, and now Matthew has put my mind at ease, if maybe it was one season too early for Zach Benson. He's playing 14 minutes a night, though, in the National Hockey League. He is chipping in, but sometimes that one more year of seasoning, although he was lighting it up in the dub, but that one more year of sort of seasoning before you make that jump to the NHL. Because you could be a 9, as he is right now, he's a 9-goal scorer right now in the games he's played. So if he goes on fire in the last 13, And we'll give him four more goals, pull that out of the hat. If you got to 13 goals in the season, that's cool. But sometimes that sets you back. You don't blossom into that 30-goal score next year and then an ultimate 50-goal score. Just for whatever reason of getting in the NHL early, you sort of stay in the role you're in maybe for the rest of your career. I can't see that happening to Benson. But there is a part of me that goes, well, you know, I got 9 goals out of him. Would it be better just to have let him put another 60 up in the dub for another year and then come on in here, you know, as a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old into the National Hockey League? I hope this does not happen with Benson, but sometimes I'll take a look from this distance and wonder, you rush some of these young guys in too often? Because, among other things, they fit the cap. Not necessarily just talking about Benson, but, you know, guys fit the cap. So I need a couple of, like the Canucks, when the payroll goes up, when Pedersen's numbers kick in, when OEL's $4.5 million kick in a couple of years, that's why you need younger guys in the lineup. And sometimes you might only have room for an $800,000 player. So I might rush a young guy into the lineup because that's, I would want, as a GM, I would go out and think, no, I'll find some veteran out there. Rather than rush a rookie, I'd go find a veteran for 800 grand and go, I'll plug the hole that way. But there are teams who are going, you just put the rookie, and I got 9 goals out of them. But anyway, the inbox, 650-650, presentation of our friends, our good friends at Dunbar Lumber. We come to you live from the Kintec studio as well. Kintec is Canada's favorite orthotics provider, the favorite one. They're powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Thousands. If you have sore feet, what are you waiting for, man? Get a hold of the fine folks at Kintec Orthotics. You will not be disappointed. In the inbox, we were talking earlier with any topic, you're welcome. Why not try, earlier we were talking about 3-on-3 OT, so a few people have thrown in a few things on the 3-on-3 OT as well. And I'll cruise through them. The one thing about being the only guy here flying solo with the inbox is so many things come flying into the inbox. For me, anyway, I'm not a smart man. It's tough to keep track of them all. I don't think I needed to tell you I'm not a smart man. I think you're pretty well aware of that. First of all, I got to get Chef Swagger, or as Dolly calls him, Chief Swagger from Hell's Kitchen. How was the steak last night? Last night I had Chef going and I wanted to know, give me some steak cooking tips, like season as you go and all. And I didn't get anything from him that I saw, Chef, if you said. So I had chicken last night because I'm waiting for your tips. How to cook. Some people will say cook it on hot heat for 4 minutes on one side, lower your heat, flip it over, cook the second side and lower heat. Things like this, I don't know. So, Chef, I need your help. Others season as you go. What does that mean? Don't season it all before you put it on. Once you get side A on, season side B, flip side C over. Then I don't have side A, C. There's things like this, Chef. You get your own website. Blake. Brooke, my dad went with you to David Thompson. Well, he didn't say with you. My dad went to David Thompson with yeah. I guess that's with yeah. That's me. So, Blake, I don't know what your last name is, but your dad went to David Thompson High School with me, which just means your dad's old. So, he's probably a great guy. But if you went to school when I did, I graduated in 79. That would be a big OLD on the charts. Cam in Seashelt. My friend Harley's over in Seashelt as well. My lovely wife, Margaret, is in Seashelt. She has a place in Seashelt. I have a place here, so we'll spend time together, or we'll spend time there or here, and now she's there and I'm here. Guys, do the math. She's listening right now, though, but she needs the break. Flip it that way. She needs the break. Anyway, in Seashelt, A, go Canucks go, says Cam. Reunite the lotto line. I have been on this for a while with the Canucks. I get that you want to kind of break the lines up and get two balanced scoring lines. If scoring is an issue for Vancouver, when were they the hottest? When were they airing out teams 5-2, 5-1? When the lotto line was together, that's when the Canucks aired out people. There will be those who say, load up the lotto line again. Outscore your opponents. We're getting near playoff time. Tockett wants to dumb it down better, as everyone does. They're facing stiffer competition, more defensive competition too. So you want a couple lines for the playoffs. You don't want the 6-5 game in the playoffs necessarily, which is also another thing, because like, why? I don't care as long as I win. 6-5. It's the playoffs, 2-1. Now we're going. We're playing the, you know, the 1-3-1. It was 2-1 game we won. I'd rather watch you win 5-4, frankly. Eventually, you can get to the part where it's like, load up the lotto line and get back to trying to win 5-4. Let's see what happens over the next couple weeks with the Canucks. Because if they are struggling and not winning in low-scoring games, as an example, or losing 4-1, eventually you might have to go, we need to go, you know, balls in and put the lotto line back together and ride that line. That said, the lotto line's together on the power play. For whatever reason, they're not scoring a lot on the power play. I don't get it, to tell you the truth. Anyway, more coming up. Hey, top of the hour, Jacob Stallard, the hockey news. I want to get the league's impression, too, from Jacob about how the Canucks are doing right now. Do people consider the Canucks a threat or just like a phantom team out there, contenders or pretenders? And so we'll talk about that, but also what's going on with the GM meetings. Three-on-three, Ovi, etc. Toffoli, by the way, sixth team in 5 years, and now he's scoring for Winnipeg, and that hurts Vancouver, even though they're in the Central, as the Jets and the Stars and the Avs want to overtake Canucks for first place. Lots going on. Vancouver Giants on Friday night, they're down to their final two games of the regular season. They have a home-and-home with Kelowna. They're in fifth place right now. That means, I may be telling you what Nathan Cantor is going to tell you in a moment, but I'm doing it anyway because I need a lead-in. They're in fifth place right now. 1 point above Kelowna. 2-point regulation win in either of the home-and-home series games in the weekends against the Rockets means the Rockets cannot catch Vancouver. The Giants will avoid the top three in the West and play Wenatchee in the first round of the playoffs. Outside chance they can still catch Wenatchee. We don't even need Nathan Cantor, but here he is. I just gave it to you. But here's Nathan Cantor's version. Let's shop and compare. I haven't heard it yet. Here's Nathan Cantor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Giants with your Vancouver Giants report.
The Vancouver Giants will have a shot at clinching fifth place in the Western Conference this Friday night after a strong weekend where they picked up 4 of a possible 6 points. The G-men edged Kamloops 3-1 at home this past Friday, and then they beat the Blazers resoundingly 9-2 in the rematch on the road on Saturday before falling 6-3 on Sunday to the Prince George Cougars. Now Sunday's loss saw another milestone for young Cameron Schmidt. After already setting the Giants' franchise record for goals in a single season by a 16-year-old rookie with his 26th tally last weekend, he notched a hat-trick this past Saturday to hit 29 goals before scoring his 30th of the season on Sunday, joining some elite company. Schmidt is just the 7th Western Hockey League player in the last 30 years to score 30 or more goals in his 16-year-old rookie season. He joins Gavin McKenna, who did it this season alongside Schmidt, Connor Bedard, Braden Jaeger, Patrick Marleau, Nolan Patrick, and Brett Connolly. Viveros has been incredibly impressed with how Schmidt's game has developed defensively.
That's the biggest thing, and that's for him to get an opportunity to play at that next level, is that he's going to have to really, really concentrate on that part of his game like that. But he's made tremendous strides in that department also, too. And sometimes you forget he's 16 years old, you know, like some of the stuff he does out there like that offensively, too. So, it's fun to watch.
Schmidt has 11 goals and 20 points in his last 11 games, but he hasn't done it alone. His linemates Jaden Lipinski and Ty Haliburta have formed a formidable top line. In fact, Lipinski has 19 points in his last 12 games, and Ty Haliburta has 15 points in his last 10 games. And the Giants will need that line to continue playing as it's been this coming weekend, when again they aim to clinch fifth place and a home-and-home with the Kelowna Rockets to close out their regular season. The standings are currently as follows. The Giants in 5th place with 68 points, the Rockets in 6th with 67, the Victoria Royals are in 7th with 65, but it's very simple this Friday. If the Giants win, they will clinch 5th. If they win on Saturday and lose on Friday, they will still clinch 5th. All they have to do is split the home and home this weekend, and they will have a first round matchup with the 4th place Wenatchee Wild. Make sure you get your tickets to Friday's regular season finale, Fan Appreciation Night, by heading to vancouvergiants.com/tickets for your Giants report. I'm Nathan Kanter.
Second half kickoff here. We're taking the wind here in the second half, by the way. We gave up the football in the first half. Don't know if you noticed. On defense for the first, you know, few plays of the show. But now we're taking the ball. With the wind, I might add. Come your way from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, provided by thousands, powered by thousands of five. Maybe I fumbled now. Powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. So you have sore feet, what are you waiting for, man? Check them all out at Kintec. Brooke Ward here, although I hesitate to say the way the second half of the show has started. Brooke Ward here, in for Drantz and Dodd. They are back next Monday. A few people in the inbox. Where are Drantz and Dodd? They are missing in action on vacation. Lower body injuries. But they will be back on Monday. Meanwhile, Rick Tocchet coming your way in a couple of moments. So stay for that, his poster pre-game talk. Canucks and Sabres tonight. Right now, the pride of the hockey news, Jacob Stoller, is with us. Hello, Jacob. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. How are you?
Awesome, pal. What is the impression? Right into it. What's the impression of the Canucks across the league right now? The way they have been playing, little up and down. Do people still consider them a big threat? Did they earlier this season? What's the word back east about that?
Well, I think people think that they may be pretenders. I don't want to shock the airwaves and put them on fire here, but I don't think anyone's really surprised. You know, since February 1st, when they got Elias Lindholm, they're just a smidge over 500. They're 25th in goals for, 16th in goals against, 23rd in save percentage. These are alarming things. And, you know, obviously, the vibes around the team, as I'm sure you guys know, you know, all too well, when they got Lindholm, was this is the time to make a move. They have the pieces. And they check every box on paper, right? You have an elite 1C in Elias Pettersson, an elite winger in JT Miller, an elite defenseman in Quinn Hughes, an elite goalie in Thatcher Demko. But there's very serious concerns about the outer edge of the lineup. And then I think with Demko too, you know, since that February 1st period, he's got a 908 save percentage, 907 save percentage, sorry. And he's really the key to this all. But I think when you look at the lineup, like the question that a lot of people have breeze to me, and I was talking to a scout about this morning, is what is their defense like without Quinn Hughes? You could say that about any team's number one defenseman, and it's not even a matter of injury, but more so when the Hughes-Hronek pairing isn't out there with Ian Cole, Tyler Myers, Carson Soucy, Nikita Zadorov, you know, what do you have there? I think that's important, especially when they're replaying teams that have 2-3 lines that can score. And then the Canucks forwards, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I just... obviously, Lindholm hasn't turned out the way that many have anticipated, but even there, like the bottom six is just, it's not convincing to me at least. And I think that the recent skid only reinforces the skepticism people have felt about the team. But yeah, I don't know if I'm really sold on what they are. And it's not even just because of the moves that other teams made in the West, but when you look at the way they've played recently and the way that their depth is looking, it's not very convincing.
If you took Hughes out, certainly hurts them defensively and really hurts them offensively, obviously. But
no, yeah, absolutely.
Keep him healthy. That's a key thing. And on the Lindholm front, I mean, he's easy pickings, low-hanging fruit here, but I mean, yeah, for a good reason as well. He's ripe and ready to fall off the tree. But the power play unit number one in practice yesterday, we'll see how that transforms tonight. Otherwise, I really don't know what they were thinking, what role they thought he'd have. Third-line center right now with Mikheyev and Lafferty. I mean, I'm not going to get a lot of juice out of you offensively when you're with Mikheyev and Lafferty on the third line. I don't know if that was the plan when they got him or if they thought he'll be with Pettersson and Hoglander or something, but that's the tail of the tape where Lindholm is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if we were in a situation where Lindholm was a stud 3C, like shutting guys down, and that was really what he brought, okay, you know, it's a different conversation. But Elias Lindholm, you know, the Canucks didn't pay that, you know, that give up that volume of draft capital and assets for Elias Pettersson to be an okay third line center. You know, it's not like he's dominating those minutes right now. And of course, they wanted some offense there as well. I think the expectation was, okay, you know, in Calgary, it wasn't working out. The wingers that were rotating alongside him weren't doing great. It wasn't a good mix. But, you know, you bring him into a situation where there's higher level wingers, you can get something out of him. And that just hasn't happened. And, you know, of course, it's not out of the realm of possibility he picks up in the playoffs, but I agree with what you said. Even when the move was made, like, was that really the missing piece they needed? in theory, it made sense to give them three solid centers if you're assuming JT Miller is going to shift over to center. But ideally, you have Miller as a wing and Lindholm's your 2C, but he hasn't really been good enough to do that. So it's certainly concerning because when the deal was made, you looked at it and you thought you got a 1-2-3 punch. Now they've got kind of a 1.5. The second line isn't very convincing on that front.
Chemistry is a huge thing. So if the idea was Lindholm with Miller or Lindholm with Pettersson and that hasn't ironed out, that's intrigue because you make trades and it doesn't always work, does it, Jacob? You could make a trade and some guy just, you think it's going to be a perfect fit, but it's not.
Well, absolutely. And I think it goes beyond what scouts look at when it comes to character and schematics and how they fit into their previous team system. Sometimes it just, you can't really tell if someone's going to jive until they come into your locker room. There's always a risk associated, even when you do all your homework, even when you have your pro scouting meetings and everyone in the room is agreeing on this guy being a perfect piece to it. You don't know until they arrive. And I think, you know, and I'm sure you guys have talked about this a lot, but it definitely didn't help to have those rumors out by the deadline that they might flip him again. Like that's not going to help a guy's morale, especially with a young family, and he just got them arriving there and the stress that comes with it. So, you know, you would hope that the leadership core there is strong enough to be able to get the most out of Lindholm and bring him in and make him feel comfortable. But there's also the argument that it goes beyond external factors. Sometimes players, like in Lindholm's case, they just don't fit in.
Flip them rumors. No one denied it from within the Canucks, by the way. So that tells you if there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire there. Didn't happen, but still, and I'm with you, pal. Yeah, you just got here and things aren't going well, and now no one's denying the fact we might try and move you for your third team in a year. That can get between the years. So they're hoping he gets straightened out. GM meetings. Wanted to ask you about this. There's numerous things. Let's just go there. High stick reviews. Are you ready for more reviews, potentially, my friend? How much faster do they have to do them if you're going to have more reviews? What do you think about the head snapping back potential of a high sticking review?
Well, to me, it's like we're adding more reviews, but we can't even get the goalie interference one down, Pat. I mean, I don't mind the idea of having a puck over glass being reviewable. I don't mind the idea of the friendly fire, high stick penalties, you know, where, you know, a guy is, you're getting called for high sticking, but it's really the opponent's teammate that high sticked him. Yeah, of course you should review that. You should get it right. But it's like, why is this the real contention point? And I don't know if you saw this, but apparently it's a 5-on-3 if you challenge those. Like that was the wording I saw from Chris Johnson, I believe. I don't know if I read that wrong.
What, they're discussing that?
Yeah, something about it being a 5-on-3 if you get it wrong.
Wow.
So
you get not even a double minor. You get two minor penalties at the same time if you're wrong on your – that's extreme.
Yeah, it's like double jeopardy. So this is what we're cracking down on, and I had to read a couple times. And listen, again, maybe I misunderstood, but when you see 5-on-3 there associated there, it seems pretty clear. So – yeah, I'm not sure why this is the thing that they're adding. Again, I agree with it in principle because, you know, you shouldn't have a situation where a puck is going over the glass and, you know, a puck's going over the glass and it's really a fringe call, but then you look at it and it's like, oh, it didn't really go out and that cost the game. Of course, I'm all for that. But, you know, I would have liked to hear a more tangible resolution to the goaltender interference thing. We've actually been somewhat fortunate, I think, this year in terms of the discrepancies between calls. Last year was just brutal. Like it was every game I felt that I was watching, there was something ridiculous. So I guess they've cleaned it up, but I would have liked to see a more concrete explanation and something that we could have, especially going into the playoffs. But I mean, to be brutally honest with you, I look at the whole rule changes, and I don't know if you saw this one, but the whole players not being able to have the legs over the bench and slash in play while they're on the ice, you know, at first it's a warning that a bench minor, I guess that's a good rule. I mean, I haven't watched many instances where that creates too many man penalties, but yeah, I mean, it's a pretty boring slate of changes. I think that I'm all for getting the call right, but you know, we need to have a timer. We need to have whether it's the Jeopardy theme song playing while they're making the decision or
you have
like
till the
something.
End. Yes, we need your answer.
Otherwise, we're going to be here forever, and it's so boring, and it's, you know, especially if it's like so on the fence. So I'm all for getting it right, but make it happen quicker.
That'd be for the fans. A couple of things. First of all, when the referee is making a call that's been under review, and after the decision's made, tell me why. Some do, some don't. Don't just say we have a good goal. Tell me why there was incidental contact or the puck was deflected in with a stick and it went on. I mean, you can give me a better explanation, although they do a pretty good job of that. But
yeah,
but otherwise, I mean, tell me that as the official too, so I'm just not left in where the PA announcer has to tell you, here's exactly why it didn't count. The leg over the bench, too funny.
Yeah.
Too funny, well, though. I was just watching that the other night at a WHL game the Giants were playing, waiting for a change, and the guy's legs hanging over the bench. And it happens all the time. But for the first time in my head, I thought, you know what, Jacob, that could be dangerous, too, with players going by. Yeah. And that's my skate blade hanging over. I was just thinking out loud, like, nah, I don't really need that skate hanging, a blade hanging over the bench as players are maybe coming by. And I can get out of the way. Maybe I can't. So there could be a safety rule behind that one.
I would agree. But one more thing on the video thing. What I do think this means, though, in terms of a large-scale look at it, is I would not be surprised if you saw teams beef up their video staffs. It's happened more now where there's also a video assistant to the video coach. But now with the stakes that are on the line here, I think you'll see departments being built out the same way we saw analytics ones as well.
Yeah, keep them upstairs and off the bench, obviously. But
of course,
there's a lot of guys on the bench now. Never used to be. But I just want that decision before the ref basically is skating away from the penalty box. There's officials, you know, off ice on camera that could make that call. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I liked the Jeopardy music, frankly. Then the fans would know, hey, I need your answer by the time this music ends.
Exactly.
3-on-3 OT, would you mess with it?
I don't think I would. There was talk about, I saw Chris Johnson reported that there was discussions that maybe they would make it 7 minutes like the ECHL is doing, but no traction. You know, I also wonder how conducive an added minute or two really is to resolving the issue, or not issue rather, but sort of the lack of shootouts. I think at that point, as we see in the final minute or two, if nothing's happening, you're going to see guys hold off until a shootout with all the retrievals and the cutback and possession. But no, I wouldn't change it. I like it. I think that 3-on-3 overtime, as much as people get annoyed when it's slower pace, there's a lot of regrouping and you're keeping possession. It's cool. It's kind of like pickup basketball, right? In the way you're watching the game and you're being strategic about it. And yeah, I mean, I have no problems with it and I'm fine keeping it for now.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate your input, my friend. Don't go 5-on-3. If you make an error, you might be 5-on-3.
Exactly.
If the coach's challenges, that's a crazy one. That one. So, thank you, pal. Appreciate it very much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you very much. That's Jacob Staller from Hockey News, who said earlier, by the way, in the East, most people are considering the Canucks pretenders rather than contenders. And he lobbed that. I was going to ask him that question directly. He lobbed that in. So that's coming from back East, and that's not Jacob saying that's Jacob saying this, but back East, people are now considering the Canucks, okay, you're not as good as you thought you were. You're not as good as we thought you were. You're now in the pretender mode. Maybe we don't have to worry about you as much as we thought we had to worry about you. The thoughts back East. Otherwise, the GM meetings, if what Jacob has read is accurate, coach's challenge right now is a delay game penalty if you're wrong. What if we put you 2 men short? Like, I really don't have a problem with coach. I don't find coaches are challenging things right and left that are, like, obscenely clean plays. I just think I'll challenge it. Well, they're not, you know, they don't do that because they'll get a penalty. But 2 men down, is that going to stop me from challenging things? And if you're wrong, don't you want me to challenge it so I get the call right? Put me down 2 men? Even a double minor, 1 man for 4 minutes would seem extreme to me when I'm supposed to be challenging to overturn what is often an incorrect call. Put me down 5-on-3? There'll be less challenges. But wow, that seems a little extreme. I don't have a big problem with the regrouping in overtime, with the team cycling back for changes, or just leaving the offensive zone. I mean, I see them do it. I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't have a big problem with it. I might not even have noticed if it wasn't pointed out. Because for years, people were trying to figure out how to get that change in. I got to get my guy off the ice. Well, now coaches figured out a way to dumb things down. But if someone said to me, you have a 5-minute overtime, how about a 10-minute 3-on-3 overtime? Well, now I just got 10 minutes of guys cycling back. Games are going to end, but I'm already complaining about 5 minutes of the cycle. If you're going to give me 7 minutes or 10 minutes, now I got 10 minutes of the cycle to deal with. In our inbox, Dunbar Lumber, the text line, 3 stores to serve you. Ladner, Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express, Ladner Center. Should be a drive-through. Maybe it's coming. Or Arbutus in Vancouver online. You can grab them too at DunbarLumber.com as I stammer through the show. By the way, our Canuck Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. You could be a champion on the worksite. You can find them together as well online. They make it easy. DLEAMC. DLEAMC.com. Avenue Machinery, Douglas Lake Equipment. Going to hear from the head coach in a couple of minutes as well. Hey, Ward, says the inbox. This is fine. Hey, Ward, I think we should extend the 3-on-3 until it's over. No time limit. Just keep them going. Eventually, someone will be too tired to come back. And the game will end because the shootout is such a childish gimmick. Imagine if Major League Baseball extended games with a home run derby. Actually, I would pay to see that. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have a home run derby at the end if it's tied. I don't have a problem with tie games. Or a slam dunk contest at the end of the game, says the writer too. But forever, timeless, you know, there's a game tomorrow and people have flight plans and there's a whole lot of things going on and the airplane's waiting. Most of them chartered anyway, though, but there are games to get to. Playoffs, different beasts. That's life, man. I'm either if I'm the Canucks playing Vegas and it's game two, I'm either flying into Vegas tomorrow. My plane will leave later, but you have to fly into Vegas too. It's even so the game can last forever. Unfortunately, you kind of have to put a time limit on regular season games. Keep them coming, though, into the inbox, 650-650. Eland, do we have Rick Tocchet, the head coach?
We're ready to go.
Ready to go. Do you know how we get into this, or would you just get into this?
Just throw to it.
Let's go, baby. Canucks, Sabres tonight. Rick Tocchet, head coach, always worth listening to. Talking to media after the pregame skate earlier today.
Yeah, Alms is going in for Deitch, and the rest is the same, yeah.
On trade deadline day, Patrick stood there and said Dakota was 10 to 14 days, so today would be 10 days. Yesterday you said you weren't going to have him for a little while still. Is he progressing the way you guys had hoped, or has there been some sort of setback?
Well, he's progressing. I think it's just, you know, we're trying to be prudent with him, basically. You know, I think, you know, when you're in these type of injuries, you know, you got to be really smart about it. We rather take the overcautious approach with him right now. There's no rush to get him. You know, obviously, we want him in. He's a big part of the team, but rather take the cautious approach right now.
Morning.
Morning, buddy.
GMs have met in Florida.
Yeah.
One thing they decided to do, and I talked to Quinn about it, he's obviously a big fan, leaving overtime the way it is. There was some talk about retrievals. You could only have so many retrievals.
Right.
You know, there'd be like a pitch clock in baseball. How long can you get into the old zone if there's a stick at the blue line? Is there going to be a video review? Anything to slow it down. He's a big fan of keeping it the way it is. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with Quinn on that. I think, you know, you can only tinker so much. You know, I think overtime's fine. If teams regroup, they regroup. I don't know if you can throw rules and, you know, shot clocks and all that. I think we're getting crazy if we do all that stuff.
Quinn said the big thing is we don't play to get to shootout. We play to win. So regroups are part of the process. It's not like some teams delay. They want to get to a shootout. They got some pretty good snipers. But he said, no, we don't play that way. Agree?
Yeah, I think with the regroups, you know, when you're in a 3-on-3 situation, when guys don't like what they see, you got that, you know, they want to pull it out. I don't blame them because, you know, you don't want to force a play. If you see most of the goals in overtime, it's usually a missed shot, breakaway. It's a 2-on-1, 3-on-1. So I think a lot of teams, if you originally see that when overtime started, you never saw that much. Now the coaches they're strategizing. You know, they don't want you to lose the puck. It's more possession. So that's kind of why people now want, they're starting to slow the game. I just think it's strategy-wise.
Another thing that came out is that you're probably going to be able to challenge a high stick, whether it's somebody else, you know, to clarify, was it a teammate stick, like the severity of it? Because sometimes we see the high stick and it's a double minor when it's not even a minor per se. You like that, have a challenge?
I just like when I don't think you can do it, but if a guy snaps his head and he doesn't touch his face, he should get a penalty. I think it was about 3-4 weeks. We had a couple of penalties against where it didn't hit the guy's face, and we got a penalty. That's what I think, like, reviewable. That's the stuff that bothers me. Why not penalize a guy that acts? I mean, don't they give him a red? If you fake it or something, don't they give you a red card or something? The soccer guys,
soccer.
No, yellow card or something. Maybe we have a yellow card if you fake something.
the Sabres gave up a very good center in Mittelstadt to get Owen Byram.
Yeah.
And now with Power and Byram and Dahlin on the back end, you only have three really good young defensemen.
Samuelson, too, is a good player.
Yeah, who activate. What kind of problems? Quinn talked about it this morning, too, that, you know, they get activated, too. What did you see in last night's game in Seattle? What do you have to watch for tonight with that group?
Really mobile. Like, you know, they're side to side, their lateral movement. Obviously, their puck skills. Their skating ability, but even defending, I saw the unreal lateral movement from that group, you know, where they can catch a wide guy, you know, defend and get up in the play. You know, they're very mobile. You know, they're probably got one of the best young defense corps in the league. They're going to be together for a bunch of years. Impressive.
Yeah, Rick, the power play has struggled at times this year, especially since the All-Star break here. Another chance to get things going against Buffalo tonight. How important is it to get that group going as you get closer to the playoffs here?
Yeah, it's big. You know, it's a mindset. I know we only had one. Obviously, we got to get more power plays. We haven't been getting a lot of power plays, so we're trying to – guys can't get in a rhythm. That's number one. That's not an excuse, but even last night or last game, there was three or four great looks. And all you can ask for is great looks. Now you got to deliver, right? You got a one-timer, you know, with the goalie kind of out of the net. We don't execute. We had somebody going downhill with a shot. We don't, like, the looks are there. We just got to start to score. You know, we got to hit the net.
Has there been any specific point of emphasis over the last couple of weeks?
For the power play?
Yeah.
Well, to me, detailed work ethic, sprinting to areas. You know, if you're in a corner, like don't be afraid, you know, within the rules, interfere with the guy. The little things in power plays matter. Everybody wants plays. This guy goes there or there. I get that. But the best power plays do the little things right. You know, whether it's, you know, you beat pressure, it's on. It's downhill, three people versus their two. You make, execute the play. There's too much emphasis around here on plays and all this stuff. And plays don't, you know, you look at some of the best powers. Colorado, they got two or three plays. They don't have many plays. It's either it's down to MacKinnon, to Nikushkin in front, whether it's a one-timer to MacKinnon or Makar. They don't have a lot. They have options, but they have the concept, but then they execute. And that's really what we have to get to.
There's Rick Tocchet, head coach of your Vancouver Canucks. On the power play, just a back sell here, that's what stood out to me more than anything. Work ethic. He mentioned other things, but work ethic, standing around, work ethic, looking for the pretty play. But work ethics stuck out to me, and I thought that just tells me guys are standing around. You got to work harder in the power play, too. I know we got an extra guy than they do, but if we're just going to sit here, pass it back and forth, especially sometimes I get a kick out of it, and this happens. But let's say you've got Hughes and Hronek on the point, and two defenders up near the top of the circles. Hughes to Hronek, and then before these two can even move, it's passed back to Hughes again. Well, thanks, man. I didn't have to move as a defender. And sometimes that works, if you can get the defenders obviously moving. But if it happens too quick sometimes, and you'll see it, it's like, I didn't have to move yet. So we're starting all over again. Work ethic, standing around, looking for pretty plays, looking for the perfect play, the power play. Just hit the net. From Rick Tocchet. More on Tocchet and what he had to say in a couple minutes. Also give you a chance to open up the phone lines here. Your thoughts on any topic are welcome. But I open the phone lines up for you if you want to jump in on it. Your thoughts on what Tocchet had to say as well. And maybe the fact that we had our reports from moments ago from our friend Jacob Stoller from the Hockey News. That back east, people are now starting to question whether the Canucks are pretenders. Because they've not been playing so well. Pretenders! They're not what they were. They're not what we thought they were. They're not what they thought they were. Your thoughts on that hot talking point are welcome as well. 604-280-0650. 604-280-0650. If you want a phone line, we've got a half hour to go. I'm Brooke Ward. Drance and Dodd, they're back on Monday. This is Sportsnet 650. Last half hour here. Back end of the show. Stretch run of the show that has everything you want except Drance and Dodd. The lads are off this week. I'm Brooke Ward, filling in. Going to get to the phone board in a couple minutes. Got a couple people on the phone board. 604-280-0650 is the number to call. And, of course, you know the inbox line. Presentation of Dunbar Lumber is 650-650. I have to jam this in. Patience on the phone board. This may change your life, though. Because I was asking earlier to Chef Swagger, all right, I need, tell me how to cook my steak. So of all the things you heard today, how to cook your steak, and I want to tell you, a couple people, Chef Swagger, have chipped in and told me how they cook their steak. And one of them's Chef Jay in Mount Pleasant, so there is some chef competition, Swagger. But you give more details. Chef Jay says, salt your meat an hour before. Now, that could mean anything, but we're talking steaks. Salt your meat an hour before you put it on the grill. And then he gives me a website to go find out what else to do after you salt your meat. Chef Swagger so far has not recommended salting my meat, but he says, Brooke, my guy. How to cook a steak. I'm going to tell you this. And then I'm because why not? Take your steak out of the fridge. That's a great point right there from Chef. Leave them on the counter for 30 minutes to come up to room temperature. I do that. Preheat your grill to high. I do that. Pat your steaks down with a paper towel. Season with equal parts of, he says, kosher salt, black pepper, garlic powder. When the grill's ready, oil the grates. Grill for 2 minutes. You getting all this? A quarter turn for another 2 minutes. That way you get the char marks going in more than one direction. Flip and cook for 2 minutes. Give them one more turn for another two. 8 minutes total on the grill. 2 minutes aside. Let them rest for 2 or 3 minutes. Serve, baby! Now it depends on the thickness of your steak, too, so you don't want to overdo it. Should be perfect medium rare, Chef Swagger. No website. Nothing about salting my meat. Well, actually, kosher salt, but I guess both guys want you to salt your meat. But who doesn't? Anyway, 604, aren't you glad? When are Drance and Dodd back? 604, Monday, 280-0650. Thanks for the tips. It's steak night at the Ward household. Now it's time to check in with our pride of Victoria. Mike, go ahead, Mike. Thanks for calling from the island, sir.
How goes it, Wardo?
Well, you know, I'm going to have steak tonight.
Yeah, sounds good. I think most of those tips are pretty good.
You got to salt your meat. You got to salt your meat.
Yeah. Got to salt your meat, and you got to let it get to room temperature for sure.
Let your meat get to room temperature before you salt it. More tips.
And then never overcook your meat either.
Never leave your meat on the grill too long.
Exactly. But anyways, what the Canucks seem to do is leave the puck on their stick on the power play for too long and not shoot the puck at the net, and that's what I'm calling about. I think they need to just shoot the puck at the net and let some people chip it in instead of just pass all day long.
And that's what Tockett was talking about, too. They're looking for the pretty goal, the pretty play. Just keep shooting the puck. Well, they were making pretty plays earlier this year, but they were also shooting the puck more.
Exactly. But you can't score if you don't shoot the puck. So put the puck on the net and see if your fortunes change, then try and get pretty later.
All that talent on their team, you have to score. You have to score.
On the
power play, like they did earlier this year.
Shoot the puck, Petey.
Shoot it, baby.
Shoot the puck next year, Petey, because people ain't going to put up with it next year when you're making 11.6 a year.
3-on-3 OT, would you change anything?
I don't know. Maybe once in a while, throw some balls and pull the goalies.
Well, that's a new strategy.
Otherwise, it worked for the one coach, so who knows?
Yeah, 3-on-3 is fine the way it is. It's what
it is.
Yeah,
exactly.
So. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it all the way
anyways,
from Victoria.
Have a good one.
Thank you, pal. Enjoy the sunshine. Paul from Poco. Let's get Paul from Poco. Poco, Paul, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing great. How are you doing?
Well, salting my meat.
Okay. Well, enjoying the sunshine anyways. listen, I know it's being a dead horse here, but, you know, we need size. And we, especially on our top six, and you know, putting EP40 with Hoggy and Garland, there's not much size there at all, and that's our top line. I'm wondering what your opinion is that knowing that we have Hronek who's going to be asking for 8 plus mil per year, probably for an 8-year contract, which I don't think we're going to be able to do. I'm wondering if we could use him as a trade bait to land somebody who's got some size, you know, a la Matt Tkachuk type of style. I'm not saying for him, of course, but I'm just saying that type
of size,
player.
Yeah, because they don't have a they're not a big team. Even with Joshua, they're not a big team. And
they're not.
I think, and you're on with me, like certainly for playoffs, now you need a bunch of guys who can also grind and score. And if you have a smaller team in the playoffs, you're usually not around very long.
Yeah, there's a key player I think that would be really somebody we should maybe go after is that guy from Arizona there, I think is Kraus, Lanton Kraus, who's got some size. I know they try to get Greenway and from Buffalo there, but you know, I think that that's definitely something that's a necessity, and I think that we need to use an asset like Aronic to land some type of player like that.
Kraus has 20 goals this year
I know.
So,
and yeah, he's a big boy.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking up what he's listed at. 6'4", 215. So,
yeah, big Canadian kid.
And probably dying to get it. Big Canadian kid, you got it, buddy, out of Ontario, but probably dying to get out of the tin can they play in Arizona, too. That's a whole other story. Thank you, pal. Appreciate it. Poco Paul.
You got it.
That's Poco Paul. Don't forget to salt your meat tonight. Half hour before you put it on the grill. Don't leave it on the grill too long. Never leave your meat anywhere too long. Anyway, steak night at the Ward household. Kraus, as an example, kid, he was a first-round pick by Florida a few years ago, too, blossoming at least into a 20-goal scorer. But size, the Canucks can use some size. I was thinking back to my my steak again. Canucks can use some size, that is for sure, and more grit. This guy's only playing 11 minutes a night, by the way, but is now a three consecutive years with over 20 goals. So he is evolving into a player. I'm not going to tell you I am fully aware of the kind of car Lawson Kraus drives. I mean, I'm going to have to do more homework on him. But size in general, yes. Talking today about what to watch out for the Sabres tonight. Well, Byram Dahlin activated offensively. What I expected from Byron once he got out of Colorado, that he'd have a more offensive role in Buffalo. They wouldn't know quite what they're getting there in Buffalo. Fan-wise anyway, that you'll make a trade and you'll just look at stats sometimes. Oh, yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden the guy comes in, oh, I can play offense again. And it works. Other times you can have guys who used to be offensive players, but now last two or three years are playing a defensive role. They never get the offense back, even put into those positions, they don't get it back. Byram wasn't in a defensive position for long, if I can call it that, in Colorado, but he's got it back. Also, Patterson between Garland and Hoglander tonight, as Poco Paul had said, called it the first line. It's listed first as people draw them out, but really Miller, Besser, and Suter are the first line for the Canucks. Garland's been great, but he's been great with Bluger and Joshua. He's earned a promotion when I look at the rest of the roster. He certainly earned a promotion to the second line over Lindholm. But Hoglander, Patterson, and Garland, we'll see. And Poco Paul's right. They're three smaller players. We'll see. I am again back going, if this continues, Patterson's issues, they haven't been horrible, but I think in the last 19 games or so, 14 points, that is a slump for him. But if you're trying to get more out of him, you might need him up and load up the lotto line again. It's not panic time to do that in Vancouver, but you know you have that ace in the hole. If you have to, you load up the lotto line and you try and win 6-5 or 6-2. Also, the thought of moving Hronik, I'm with you. He'll be trade bait. He's going to be an RFA next year. Then he's going to want, so far, the word is around $8 million bucks or so. At even 2 years from now, the cap's going up. OEL's money is going to be $4.5 million on the books. The cap's going up. Other guys are going to want more money too. The Canucks have a zillion free agents. They're not all high-ticket items, but they have a kajillion free agents on their roster. I think it's 9 UFAs and a couple of RFAs, and that even sounds high as I say it, but they got a lot of guys that have to be re-signed. not necessarily for $5 million. Now, you get the Myers money off the books. You're looking eventually to get the Mikheyev money off the books. There'll be room to move, but you, like the Canucks, like many other teams, will be top-heavy in salary and then trying to fill in holes. I was asking earlier, too, about, oh, by the way, one more. I want to make sure I get this in before I talk about Ovi again, because people are talking about Ovi in the inbox. One very interesting point that Tockett made, and it's a great point, and he wasn't talking about 5-on-3 if you're wrong as a coach. We're going to give you two consecutive, not consecutive, I don't even know what you call it because I haven't seen it, but we're giving you two delay game penalties on the same play, two penalties, not a 4-minute delay a game, two 2-minute minors for delay a game. And now it's a 5-on-3 if you're challenging your own. That seems excessive. But if it comes to, I will buy more into this. If you're just checking to whether it was a high stick when the head snaps back, high stick only, I'm like, do we really need a video review for that? I know guys are faking it and getting calls, but okay, we stop, video review, no penalty, okay. It twofold from Tockett's suggestion. We stop, we look at the video. A, no penalty. B, embellishment for the head snapping back. You get to. Ooh, Rick Tockett's on the mark. I like that. That's worth the stoppage if you want to stop those head snapping back. And I don't see as many now as I used to. Sees more integrity by the players these days. You don't see as much as you used to. But that slowdown in play is kind of like, instead of taking my guy off for 2 minutes, I challenge, A, not only no penalty, but if that head snap back and it's embellishment, bang, you get the penalty. Okay, I'm in. I will take that slowdown to play. Tockett, good suggestion today. A beautiful day in Vancouver, by the way, huh? Another good one. Almost makes up for, as we talked about before, almost makes up for the crap winter we had. When they get around to March the 18th or 19th or whatever the date is, and they're 19th, I guess, today, and they're already talking about, be careful, we're going to have water shortages and droughts. We're expecting a dry summer. But it also gets me thinking, well, we had a lot of rain, certainly here on the West Coast still. Can't we harness more of this rain? Can't we? Just harness more of the rain, and then we don't have to worry. From a forest fire standpoint, you have to worry about drought conditions, but at least for water coming into your taps, which thankfully we've never had an issue with, but still water shortages, can't water your lawn, all this. Isn't there a way we could harness more water in the winter? And if we have extra, we sell it and pay for the way we harness it. Anyway, my 2 cents. Ovechkin, 51 behind Gretzky now. Gretzky played in an era of, well, I'll put this positive. Ovi played in an era of much better goaltending. So is it more impressive? Ovi's 843 compared to Gretzky's 894. What's really more impressive? And it's tough comparing eras. But people are also reminding me now that, yes, Gretzky played in a different, more wide-open era, but Ovi, albeit facing bigger goaltenders and bigger goaltender equipment at times and more talented goaltenders. Clearly, he's using better equipment too. And that flex stick, everybody can shoot it 1,000 miles an hour. In the inbox, Ovi's goal total impressive, but because of goaltending advances in terms of sizes and style, Ovi mostly played during the post-lockout wide-open rules, agreed. Less physical, less interference, higher skating rate, stick technology, resulting in higher puck velocity. So there are things in that as well. Gretzky used a wooden stick in 1980 skates. And there was way more clutch and grab if you could catch him and clutch and grab him. So that is a great point, too. That's, again, it reminds me, too, why it's tough to compare generation to generation for any sport, any player. Let's see. Leroy in the inbox. Always cook your steak in the dishwasher. Season with Palmolive. Do not salt your meat. Thank you. I have not tried that yet, although some of the steaks I've cooked, frankly, have tasted like I did cook them in the dishwasher. Interesting, by the way, that the Patrick Alvin has also said on the Lindholm front. This news is a little stale, but I've forgotten about it till right now. But Alvin has said, non-committal, shall we say, when it comes to re-signing Lindholm. Which should not be a shock after we've seen him play. But that also tells you that the Canucks management knows Lindholm has not lived up to what they expected. So there's no way, if he did, they'd be saying, we're going to try and find a way. Like they say about Hronek, we're going to try and find a way. But the move for Lindholm, and Lindholm is not panned out to this point, has a chance to save it in the stretch run and if he becomes a playoff performer. But hey, again, you got to have money on the payroll to pay him as well as is well documented, all the others. And Lindholm hasn't done much, but maybe win faceoffs. He's been, you know, a decent defensive center. But when you have Alvin actually non-committal about even signing Lindholm, doesn't mean they won't. Or at this point, non-committal, that's telling you all you need to know as well is they're seeing the same things that you are seeing with Lindholm. And it's like, whoa, we paid a high price for this guy, and it is not panning out. And Kuzmenko was not the high price they paid. It was the draft picks and the prospects, whether they pan out or not as well. But at this point, do you want Lindholm on your team? Never mind Kuz. Let's just say Kuz is gone. Do you want Lindholm on your team right now? And never mind the prospects. Or would you rather have the first and fourth round draft picks back? I kind of would, you know, I kind of take Kuzi back right now, even if I did. But between them, I want those draft picks, the first rounder in particular. So even they know and are admitting that, yeah, it hasn't worked out like we thought. So they got rid of one problem that was of their own creation in Kuzmenko, at least. They're the guys who signed him. There's the guy who extended him. So that was a problem. So, okay, we got rid of him. We got rid of a problem. One of the few mistakes we've actually made was the Kuzmenko deal because of the money. Not necessarily the production. If he was making $3 million, okay, but $5.5 million, they were in a real hurry to give him that money. Yeah, 39 goal score, but they were in a huge hurry to give him that money. So one of the few mistakes the new administration has made is that. And then one of the other ones ties into Kuzi. Maybe he's the jinx. Because the Lindholm deal right now is becoming their second mistake. And, you know, you could throw Mikheyev and others at me too, but I mean, but that basically is their second mistake so far of what they gave up to get Lindholm. And it's funny that the common denominator here is Kuzmenko. So mistake number one has potentially turned into mistake number two. If someone wanted to look back at Hronek, by the way, who has performed, albeit playing with Hughes all the time, the first rounder, et cetera, they sent there, that was the first rounder they got for Horvat. So in effect, would you have traded Horvat even up for what you've seen from Hronek? And I'd say yeah. Now, I don't know how Hronek does without Hughes as a regular partner. Both guys have slowed down in the second half. Who hasn't on the Canucks? But if people wanted to say no because of what they traded, is that a mistake? Well, we're not right now. And Horvat was due a new contract that the Canucks couldn't afford with Pettersson coming up. So they were in a position, too, where, well, I'd probably have to move somebody. And they couldn't move Besser. So Hronek for Horvat, okay, we traded a forward away that we might not have been able to afford, and we got a defenseman back in return, and we didn't trade position for position. So, okay, a forward went for a defenseman we needed. That's great. However, this defenseman's an RFA. So I don't think anyone signs him to an RFA deal because it's just not done. It's frowned upon in the National Hockey League. But still, a year from now, if they don't sign him, he could walk for nothing. Then you can look back and say, Horvat, who still could have been around, or Hronek, who's gone after 2 years. Then you can say, hey, that trade did not pan out. But at the moment, the moment currently, yeah, I'd have traded Horvat from what I've seen for Hronek. I'd have done that deal. And Horvat's having a good year with the Islanders, too. Ted Hitchcock wants to know if Horvat sign an offer sheet. I'm sure Hronek, I'm sure, would sign an offer sheet, but will somebody offer him one? And then the Canucks have, you know, the right to match. Chef Steven in Langley, Mr. Ward, Chef Swagger's correct on the steak process. But if you want to take it to another level, and who doesn't, add some chili flakes to Montreal steak spice, smoke it for 10 minutes. Add that to your steak. I don't know how to smoke the steak spice and the chili. Do you just put it in a small frying pan and sort of smoke it? I smoke a lot of things, he said. On the stove, when I'm cooking, a lot of things tend to smoke, usually not intentionally. And then the smoke alarm goes off and you get a whole other thing. And this from someone in Duncan, Lindholm is fine. Let's wait till golf season to actually measure his value. Well, that's what we say too. He's been fine, but not for the price they paid to get him. And let's see what happens. If he's a playoff gamer, if he can lift his game, I'm waiting for those guys to do it. You got to have three or four guys that really elevate their games in the playoffs. Then you could start to look and go, ooh, look how he helped. He helped Canucks win a game or two. If he's all dead quiet, if he's the same in the playoffs as he's been in the regular season, then it's time to let him walk. Eland, you were saying something to me, but I didn't pick it up. So you could do. Jan Pro. I thought somebody named Jan was coming up on the radio station next. I thought, who is Jan Pro? There's a Jan Pro promo. Now I'm trying to find it again. I'm in the vast paperwork over here. Do you want to do it? Because I can't find it. Jan Pro, you know what you got to do? You got to get on board with Jan Pro. Is that the one you texted me the other day? Okay, I'll look that up. How are you guys doing today? Jan Pro, to find your text right now. Jan Pro is coming up next on the big show. You're going to like Jan Pro. She's really good. She takes care of business, and she's also the leader in commercial cleaning. Jan Pro. That would be a great radio name, actually. Jan Pro. Jan Pro, keep your workplace safe during the flu season. Trust Jan Pro. They got pros. And VIROSHIELD disinfection service as well. Visit janpro.ca. Jan Pro, one of the greatest broadcasters in Vancouver history. Thank you so much. By the way, one quickie just to fade with here. Thoughts today with the George Garrett family. George Garrett has passed away. If you're young, you won't know him. But a long time news broadcaster with CKNW forever and one of the veterans. This guy could do it all and do it well. He was classic broadcaster and he wasn't getting any younger. But George Garrett, I understand, has passed away. And that, whether he's in the industry, retired a few years back or not, that's a big loss as we lose another veteran of the staff as well in George Garrett. Thoughts with his family. I'm Brooke Ward. Back tomorrow. Drantz and Daughter back on Monday. Eland produced the program. Victor's floating around. Dom's sitting around not doing much, but that's Dom. But they're all here. We thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for listening. I'm Brooke Ward. This is Sportsnet 650.